Yahweh's feast days. We will start at in Deuteronomy 16, 16, 17. In Deuteronomy, which in Hebrew would be Debarim, and what that means in English is these are the words. We read, three times in a year shall all your males appear before Yahweh your Elohim in the place which he shall choose, in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and in the Feast of Weeks, and in the Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before Yahweh empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahweh your Elohim, which he has given you. Yahweh chooses the place location you shall appear before him according to your assembly. When you come before Yahweh, you are to bring a portion of the blessing that he has provided to you for your well-being. Then we will go into righteous judgment and what righteousness means according to Yahweh. It will be starting at Deuteronomy 16, 18. Judges and officers shall you make yourselves in all your gates, which Yahweh your Elohim gives you, according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment. Yahweh always wants his Torah, his instructions, done in an orderly fashion. Why the need for judges and officers is to see that it is carried out accordingly. And here are some verses that are where Yahweh shows you what his righteousness is. Deuteronomy 6, 24, 25 defines for us what righteous means. And Yahweh commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear Yahweh our Elohim, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as at this day. And it shall be righteousness to us if we observe to do all this commandment before Yahweh Elohim, as he has commanded us. And another verse concerning Yahweh's righteousness, Psalm 119, 172. Let my tongue sing of your word, for all your commandments are righteous. It is interesting to look at the attributes assigned to righteous also by Webster's Dictionary. One, good, morally admirable. Two, clean-handed, guiltless, innocent, free from evil or guilt. Three, just, especially of what is legal or ethically right or proper or fitting. Four, moral, concerned with the principles of right and wrong, conforming to standards of behavior and character based on those principles. Five, virtuous, morally excellent. And six, worthy, having worth or merit or value, being honorable or admirable. Suffice it to say that the Torah is righteous. Walking the narrow path with Yahshua leads you to righteousness, which brings you to the narrow gate, at which time you will be found righteous and be allowed to enter through that gate into the kingdom. The Torah, Yahshua. Yahshua is the path. Yahshua is salvation, and Yahshua is the gatekeeper. Then we move on to Deuteronomy 16, 19, 20. You shall not wrest justice. You shall not respect persons. Neither shall you take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. That which is altogether just shall you follow, that you may live and inherit the land which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you. Here to wrest justice means to remove or put away, while taking a bribe compromises you and destroys that which is righteous. The Torah is just and will lead to eternal life and the inheritance to partake of with Yahshua in the kingdom. Yahweh's word is what you base your decisions on, not the word of a man. And now we'll move on to preparation of tabernacles. 2 Chronicles 5, 4, 5, and 6. In the Hebrew language, it would be Debra Havamim, which means words, acts of the days. Tells us of the preparing of the temple for Yahweh to dwell in. And all the elders of Israel came, and the Levites took up the ark. And they brought up the ark and the tent of meeting and all the holy vessels that were in the tent. These the priests, the Levites, brought up. And King Solomon and all the congregation of Israel that were assembled to him were before the ark, sacrificing sheep and oxen that could not be counted nor number for multitude. Take note that Yahweh's house was completed and presented on the first day of Tabernacles, Sukkot. This shows us that the house was not complete until they had celebrated Passover. In Hebrew, that would be Pesach. Unleavened bread, and in Hebrew, that would be Hag Matzot. Pentecost, and in Hebrew, that would be Shavuot. The Feast of Trumpets, and in Hebrew, that would be Yom Terah. And the Day of Atonement, which would be Yom Kippur in Hebrew. Western Greek concept is linear, past, present, and future, so to speak, is a straight line. Hebrew concept is circular, what has been done and what is going to be done. And I would like to, before going into my next thing, is to get into what we are according to Scripture. Christians versus Nazarenes, what are you? What are those that enter into the, and this is not my teaching, this is a teaching by a gentleman by the name of Paul Sides. What are those that enter into the new covenant cult? Are they known as Christians or Nazarenes? Christians are named after their God, Christos. Nazarenes are so named because they are followers of the branch. For hundreds of years before Yahshua came as the Messiah, followers of pagan Christ were known as Christians. They were pagan followers of the various Christs, such as Christos Mithra. The Roman Emperor Constantine, who created Christianity, was a convert of Mithraism. He was a Christian. Christian is not the name the Bible uses of those who follow Yahshua. They were known as Nazarenes. Those who followed John the Baptist, Yochanan, became known as Nazarenes, or in English, that would be Nazarenes. As John was sent to prepare the way for the branch, John was actively preparing for the coming Messiah, which he knew was Yahshua. John the Great Nazarene, the teacher of righteousness. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, there is a figure called the Great Nazarene, and teacher of righteousness, who would be sent by Yahweh to prepare the way for the branch. John 1, 6, 9. There was a man sent from the predestined plan of Yahweh, whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. He was said to have the proper understanding of the Torah, qualified in its accurate instruction, and be the one through whom Yahweh would reveal to the community the hidden things in which Israel had gone astray. He would rightfully be of the house of Zadok. This was Yahshua's mentor and teacher, John the Great Nazri, who was of the house of Zadok and the anointed high priest. The description of the Great Nazri is found in the Damascus document of the Dead Sea Scroll, which carbon dating has placed around 44 BC. The time John was acting as high priest in the wilderness, John was prophesied to fulfill this very role by his father Zechariah. Luke 1:76 through 80. And you, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High, for you will go on before Yahweh to prepare the way for him, who would be Yahshua, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins, because of the tender mercy of our Elohim, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven, to shine on those in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, and he lived in the wilderness until he appeared publicly to Israel. The great Nazri, founder of the Nazarenes at that time, was undoubtedly Yochanan, John the Baptist, who was the rightful high priest from the house of Zadok. Although there is a debate about who this great Nazri was among current scholars, there should be no doubt. Yahshua told us exactly who this great teacher of righteousness among the Nazarenes and the Essenes was. It was his own mentor. Matthew 11:11. I tell you the truth, among those born of women, no one has arisen greater than John the Baptist. If there was no one greater than John ever born of a woman, and that includes all men, then he is the great Nazri. So much for that debate. Yahshua the branch settled it. So we have John, the prophesied great Nazar and teacher of righteousness, Torah, of the Nazarenes, mentioned in the Dead Sea Scrolls and identified by the Messiah, leading the elect for the branch, and they were not called Christians, they were called Nazris or Nazarenes. Yahshua the Nazarene, follower of John. Nazarenes were a sect among the Jews in Israel who followed John the Baptist at the time Yahshua lived. Under John's direction, the Nazarenes, knowing the prophecies of Daniel concerning the timing of the Messiah's coming, bathed in the mikveh daily in expectation of the Messiah's arrival. Yahshua and many of his disciples were followers of John the Baptist and were all Nazarenes. When John consecrated Yahshua as his successor, his followers then followed Yahshua the Nazarene and accepted him as the Messiah. What are Nazarenes? Nazarenes were spoken of as guardians of the Torah, the prophets, and Messiah. It is a mistranslation in our Bibles where it says, Jesus of Nazareth, which we'll remove the Jesus part. It should read, Yahshua the Nazarene. Not only is his name not Jesus, not only was Yahshua not from Nazareth, but the terms sect of the Nazarenes and Yahshua of Nazareth are the same. They both employ the adjective Nazraya, or Nazri, meaning branch, which is referring to the prophecy in Isaiah concerning the branch and prophecy of Zechariah concerning the branch. The English word Nazarene, in Greek it would be Nazarios, Aramaic Nazraya, or Hebrew Nazri, comes from the Hebrew word netzer, branch, which itself is derived from the verb natsar, which means to guard, to watch, to keep, or to preserve, in context speaking of the Torah. In the Old Testament Hebrew lexicon, Strong's number 5341, the translated word natsar, this is the definition of it: to guard, to watch over, to keep, to watch, guard, keep, to preserve, guard from dangers, to keep, observe, guard with fidelity, to guard, keep secret, to be kept close, be blockaded, watchmen. So in context of the Torah and the prophets, Yahshua the Nazarene was to keep and observe the Torah and guard, watch over, and protect it from lawlessness. The Apostle Paul, leader of the Nazarenes, follower of Yahshua. The Apostle Paul, too, was a Nazarene, or Nazri. After Paul was arrested in Jerusalem, he was escorted to Caesarea to appear before the governor Felix. Under the authority of Ananias, the unauthorized high priest, Tertullus brought the charges before Felix. Notice his accusation. Acts 24:5-6. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow, a plague, and a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also has gone about to profane the temple whom we took and would have judged according to our law. Now I would like to move on to from physical shadows to spiritual truths. And the reason I brought this teaching in is because this is part of what we're going to be going into. One, we Nazarenes are the house and the temple. Two, we Nazarenes are the holy vessels, set apart items in the tabernacle. Yahshua, our high priest, is who brings us up in spirit now. Three, the ark. The commandments are now written in on our hearts to follow because of an obedience of love, to regard, to cherish, to protect. And love in the English does not convey the meaning that it does in the Hebrew. Because in the Hebrew, it actually means to love, in Hebrew means to regard, to cherish, to protect, to preserve. Hebrew is an action language. Pictorial, ancient Semitic Hebrew uses symbols, pictures, where each symbol has a distinct meaning, and when symbols are combined, they have another meaning. By examples, using pictographs, one can show that Hebrew is an action language. In Strong's Hebrew, number 7965, Shalom is translated as peace and has the pictorial representation. And with Hebrew, you always read from right to left, would be the two front teeth, the shepherd's staff, the tent peg, and the symbol for water. Solomon in Hebrew comes from the word shalom and has the pictorial representation of the two front teeth, the shepherd's staff, the symbol for water, and the man with raised arms. Solomon in Hebrew is Shalomon. And that comes from shalom, meaning peace. Thus, the pictorial representation is showing this king in a time of peace would raise his hands to Yahweh. Remember, when reading Hebrew, you always read from the right to the left. The pictorial meaning of shalom is the two front teeth, the shepherd's staff, the water symbol, and the man with raised arms. And now what we have here is now reading from the right to the left, we find it to say, to press toward by the king's blood to reveal. Vessels in the old covenant. Numbers 19:15. And every open vessel which has no covering bound upon it is unclean. In this verse, the vessel is man, and that covering is Yahshua. The man, vessel of Yahweh, whose walk is with Yahshua, the Torah, and has Yahshua's blood poured out on him, is granted salvation, for he is covered. The man not of Yahweh has no covering. He is unclean, and he will not be granted entry into the kingdom. Using the ancient Hebrew lexicon and Strong's number 3627, the Hebrew word kelchi, translated vessel, is pictorially represented as the open palm and the shepherd's staff. And what that means is the action is complete, concrete. Vessel. Abstract, meaning to that would be whole, a container for holding. Contents, that is full or whole. And we will go to 2 Chronicles 5:4-5. And all the elders of Israel came, and the Levites took up the ark, and they brought up the ark, and the tent of meeting, and all the holy vessels that were in the tent. These the priests, the Levites, brought up. As previously stated, the vessel symbolizes man, and the tent of meeting symbolizes Yahshua. With Yahshua's blood covering us, we then are vessels in the tent of meeting, and the tent of meeting is the representation of Yahshua. This verse gives the impression that the tent will be moved into the new temple as well, or those in Messiah being moved into Yahweh's house, temple, his dwelling place, his Sukkot. So much here has been spoken of the tent of meeting, so let us look at the pictograph for the word tent. The pictograph for the word tent would be the ox head, the tent peg, the man with raised arms, and the shepherd's staff. Remember, Hebrew is read right to left. The ox head represents strong power leader. In context here, it represents a star shining in the distance. The tent peg, to secure. The man with raised arms, arms raised looking at a great sight. And the shepherd's staff, representing the idea of toward, as a shepherd uses his staff to guide his sheep in a certain direction. Two-letter root in ancient Hebrew lexicon, man with raised arms and the shepherd's staff, action, shine, concrete, star, abstract, distant. In combining these letters, one can read, a looking toward a light in the distance. The stars have always been used to guide the traveler or the shepherd to his home or destination. Yahshua is the tent of meeting. The star led the wise men to the Messiah. By coming to Yahshua, you will enter the tent. The tabernacle construction. Whatever material, including the color required for construction, that was needed was obtained from the Egyptians before Israel left Egypt. The donations were given by the people whenever they were asked. Exodus 25, 1 through 5. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, that they take for me an offering. Of every man whose heart makes him willing, you shall take my offering. And this is the offering which you shall take of them, gold and silver and brass and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair and ram skins dyed red and fine leather and acacia wood. These are items used to build the tabernacle, including the color scheme, were numerous. This is the physical shadows to the spiritual truths concerning these items. Gold, Yahshua's blood, priceless, would be the spiritual representation of that. It cannot be earned, nor can it be bought. Been poured out on those in Messiah. Silver, the spiritual representation of that would be redemption. For those Nazarenes who give their heart to Yahweh and have been immersed in Yahshua's name. Bronze, the spiritual representation of that is very heavy. Yahweh's judgment will fall on those who are not redeemed. Blue, and the spiritual representation of that would be the Torah instructions. In some cases, some people will say heavenly, but the Torah is heavenly. Yahshua is the living Torah. Purple, the spiritual representation of that would be kingship. Yahshua is the King of Kings, the first of the first fruits, and as first fruits, we can share in the inheritance and be kings under the King of Kings, Yahshua. Scarlet, red, and the spiritual meaning for this, it would represent blood. Represents your sin being washed clean by Yahshua's blood. Fine linen, the inner layer, the representation of that is righteousness or purity. Goat's hair, placed over the fine white linen. The spiritual representation of that would be as a sin offering. Ram skin dyed red. The spiritual representation of that is a substitution, a covering. Exodus 26, 14. And you shall make a covering for the tent of ram skin dyed red, Yahshua's blood, and a covering of fine leather above. Fine leather, that in the spiritual representation, that is a protection and final covering. Acacia wood. When I don't have the verse off hand, but acacia wood, Yahweh said that they were to bring up standing wood, acacia wood, to build the temple with. The acacia wood actually represents Yahweh's chosen, his Nazarenes. When they come before Yahweh upstanding and they're immersed in Yahshua's name, the gold is poured out over them, which is also a representation of Yahshua's blood. So we Nazarenes are that acacia wood. This is Yahweh's plan for tabernacles as we see in prophecy. Those under the tent covering were protected. This is Yahweh's sukkah. We must enter it. This is the tent Solomon moved into the temple. These same teachings are found in the Brit Hadashah, the New Testament. The vessels in the New Covenant, the New Agreement. 2 Corinthians 4, 7-10. But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the exceeding greatness of the power may be of Yahweh, and not from ourselves. We are pressed on every side, yet not distressed. Perplexed, but not to despair. Pursued, yet not forsaken. Struck down, yet not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body of the dying of Yahshua, that the life also of Yahshua may be manifested in our mortal flesh. And 2 Corinthians 5, 1-5. For we know that as the earthly house of our tabernacle is dissolved, we have a building from Yahweh, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For truly in this we groan, longing to be clothed upon with our habitation which is from heaven. If so be that being clothed, we shall not be found naked. For indeed, we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that would we be unclothed, but that we would be clothed upon. And what is mortal may be swallowed up of life. Now he that produced us for this very thing is Yahweh, who gave us the pledge of the Spirit. Yes, each of us is a vessel. Yes, we collectively are the body of Yahshua. By following of the feast, we will not be found naked and move our earthly tent into Yahweh's tent. Yes, Yahweh prepared us through the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Trumpets, and the Day of Atonement to enable us to enter into his dwelling, tabernacle, Sukkot, as we, the set-apart vessels, Nazarenes, move into the temple. The Torah instructions are also moved into the temple. In conclusion, what this study is showing us is that which is written in the law and the prophets is a shadow and prelude to all matters concerning those in the body of Messiah. Yes, all things written in the Brit Hadashah are shown to us in the Tanakh. Thus, before us, we have everything available to make us as complete as Yahshua is. All we must do is obey out of an obedience of love. 2 Chronicles 6:1-2. Then Solomon spoke, Yahweh has said that he would dwell in the thick darkness, but I have built you a house of habitation and a place for you to dwell in forever. By continuing our obedience, we are promised to enter the promised land where Yahshua will lead us. 2 Chronicles 6:30. Then hear from heaven your dwelling place, and forgive, and render to every man according to all his ways, whose heart you know. For you, even you only, know the hearts of the children of men. For each of us, the point from which everything we do and say comes from our heart. Chronicles 6:31-33. That they may fear you, to walk in your ways, so long as they live in the land which you gave to our fathers. Moreover, concerning the foreigner, that is not of your people Israel, when he shall come from a far country for your great name's sake, and your mighty hand, and your outstretched arm, when they shall come and pray toward this house, then hear from heaven, even from your dwelling place, and do according to all that the foreigner calls to you for, that all the peoples of the earth may know your name, and that they may know that this house which I built is called by your name. What we read here is that everything begins with the name Yahweh, with tabernacles pointing to everything that is to come in the millennial reign. We, as vessels of Yahweh, will come into the tabernacles bearing the name of Yahweh and of his son Yahshua. 2 Chronicles 6:13. For Solomon had made a bronze scaffold, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits broad and 3 cubits high, and had set it in the middle of the court. And he stood upon it and kneeled down upon his knees before all the assembly of Israel and spread forth his hands toward heaven. Solomon went down on his knees and humbled himself in front of all of Israel to show he was not their king and that he was in submission to Yahweh. Yahweh was not only his king, but their king as well. By preparing our temples, to be filled with Yahweh's spirit, we remain in Messiah and be covered by the blood of Yahshua the Lamb. 2 Chronicles 7:1-4. Now when Solomon had made an end of praying, the fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices. And the glory of Yahweh filled the house. And the priests could not enter into the house of Yahweh because of the glory of Yahweh filled Yahweh's house. And all the children of Israel looked on when the fire came down and the glory of Yahweh was upon the house. And they bowed themselves with their faces to the ground upon the pavement and worshiped and gave thanks to Yahweh, saying, "For he is good, for his loving kindness endures forever." Then the king and all the people offered sacrifice before Yahweh. After all the commandments and set apart vessels, Nazarenes move into the temple, Yahweh shows up because we live our life in Messiah. This is how we dedicate our temples during this Moedim, Tabernacle Sukkot. We move and teach others to move the commandments into their lives, into their temple, and to believe on the true name of Yahweh, the Mighty One, the Mighty Elohim of Israel, so that he can fill their temple. This is what happens when one lives the evangel. Yah bless.